Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape the community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Driving through Milwaukee's Bronzeville neighborhood can tell you a lot about the history of the city. It's one of the oldest neighborhoods in the city, but many of the buildings that once stood there were torn down to make way for the highways. It was a process known as urban renewal, a movement in American cities that decimated American communities and targeted Black neighborhoods. In his new book, Struggle for the City, author Derek Hanley explores the impact urban renewal projects had on communities and how they fought back. Hanley will join Lake Effect's Joy Powers for a conversation at Boswell Book Company next Tuesday, but ahead of that, he joins her in studio to talk about the book.
For people who are really unfamiliar with this topic, how would you describe the urban renewal movement of the 1950s and 1960s?
Sure. So first was the passing of the Housing Act of 1949, and then later the Housing Act of 1954, which gave cities federal money to sort of remake their cities. And 2 years after the Housing Act, we get the Highway Act of 1956. So now cities are able to build highways.
What was, in theory, the intention of these acts?
The intention, well, the stated intention was, at least, was to remove blight. You know, some of the housing, some of these buildings had been old, had, you know, very well aged and decrepit, and sort of remake. Now, remember, we're coming off the highs of winning World War II, this vision of modernism and the future. So where there was connecting highways for the people who were moving out into the suburbs to bring them back into the city for shopping or entertainment life or reimagining the geography of the city, it was in its name, renewal, this renewing of American cities. But the effect of it or the actual reality of it often meant that people of color, specifically African American people, suffered negatively by these projects.
Yeah. It seems like at the crux of this issue is really this term blight.
Yes.
This idea of, well, you know, these are older buildings, older homes. They're going to be, you know, it seemed like in theory rebuilt. There's going to be new things that are
right
coming into these areas. Now, the realization of that was a little different.
Right.
But how was this term blight really applied in American cities like Milwaukee?
Well, as I point out in the book, it was used in the very beginning. It was used in the federal documents. It was used in the writing of the law. In order to have access to the money, to the federal dollars, these cities had to use the word blight on specific neighborhoods. They had to be labeled blighted. Now, the problem with that, there might have been some buildings that could have been refurbished or tore down, but there were a lot of buildings that were not, quote unquote, blighted. I mean, there were churches that were torn down. There was businesses. And oftentimes, it was the African-American communities that were targeted. We have this long history, whether it's through the racial covenants, whether it's through the redlining maps, that the presence of Black people in a particular neighborhood meant the neighborhood was in decline, which then you can use the word blight, and then you come in and tear down, essentially tear down the neighborhood.
In the case of Milwaukee, that meant often tearing down businesses.
Yes.
As you mentioned, churches.
That's correct.
Neighborhoods that were older neighborhoods.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
But were still very much functioning neighborhoods.
They were functioning. There were businesses, of course. You know, we here in Milwaukee, we talk about Bronzeville, and there have been a lot of books written about Bronzeville. Most recently, a colleague at UWM who wrote Voices of Milwaukee, Bronzeville, Sandra E. Jones, Dr. Jones. And we hear those stories of how wonderful this neighborhood was, how the community, the businesses, and then with the building of the highways, as well as some other urban renewal projects, you sort of lost that community. And when I'm teaching with my students and I'm talking to them about Black businesses, it's like, okay, you lose your business. It's not like you can pick up, okay, I'm going to relocate my business to Whitefish Bay or Shorewood, right? You lose in these places where you can open your business, which means jobs go away, means income. So it has this adverse negative effect, as well as the people who lose their homes as to where can they move to. It just create a domino effect of negative results.
Looking at Bronzeville specifically, African-American Milwaukeeans, as you mentioned, found themselves in this kind of double bind. They were losing housing from the neighborhood that they were allowed to live in, but the available housing in Milwaukee wasn't always open to them.
Right.
Can you unpack what housing looked like at that time in Milwaukee?
You know, Langston Hughes wrote a poem, Restrictive Covenants, and he used the term hemmed in, right? And you looked at the majority of the Black population was in the North Side. In addition to there being limited housing, African Americans didn't have access to the resources even to fix up their houses. If it wasn't for the Columbia Savings and Loan Associations, some people wouldn't even been able to get money to fix up their homes or buy new property, things of that sort. So the houses and the available houses, if they're not being taken care of, especially if they're absent landlords who really don't care, it's going to be in dilapidated spaces. When you have overcrowding, oh, I have this nice four-bedroom house, I can divide it up. And so three different families could be living here. And so as far back as the 1920s, you know, we see in the archives of African-American organizations talk about the problem of housing, the available housing and the housing that is available, the standards of it. By the time of urban renewal, this had already been a consistent problem.
Looking at the book itself.
Yes.
You really focus on it as the title might suggest, the struggle for the city, you really focus on that fight. And you focus on three different cities. You look at St. Paul, Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee.
Yes.
What was it about what happened in these cities that really exemplified what this struggle between African-American communities and the government looked like throughout northern cities?
Well, first let me say, Joy, that I could have chose any three northern cities, to be honest with you. Pittsburgh is my hometown, and I grew up hearing these stories of what was lost when the Lower Hill neighborhood was torn down. I wanted to look at the cities that perhaps didn't have the larger national profile, like your Chicago's, like your Detroit's. Pittsburgh was one of the first. The city of Pittsburgh was one of the first to implement these urban renewal policies. And at the very beginning, African Americans were not initially resistant because they thought they were going to benefit from it. They thought new housing was going to be built for them. And in the case of the Lower Hill, the one apartment building that was built was for middle to upper middle class residents. And so they quickly found out that this thing called urban renewal was not for them. Or, as often gets quoted, and James Baldwin, who's used this term as well, urban renewal meant Negro removal. But the three cities had smaller African-American populations, so I was very curious to see how they mobilize. And that's what I wanted to see. There are books about what the government did. Think about Robert Moses in New York and Mayor Meyer here. We got all those papers and all those documents. And we also have the books about the effects of it, the trauma of urban renewal. But what I didn't see was that exact moment when the people in these communities were finding out the plans. And it wasn't passive. And we sometimes think that the city wants to do something and then they do it and nobody says anything. And so that's what I was looking at. And that's what I was focusing on in this book. And what I've discovered is whether it was the local chapters of the Urban League, the local chapters of the NAACP, they were talking to each other across the cities. What's going on over here? What's going on over there? What you also saw was these local organizations pop up. That has been consistent. And, you know, here in Milwaukee, we hear about Bronzeville. I was growing up in Pittsburgh, you hear about the Hill District. You go to St. Paul, you hear about Rondo. Those are the things that they have in common. These were critical events that has resonance within the communities today. People were reacting and they were organizing and they were trying to do everything they could to save their communities. The strategies might look a little different based off of what was available, but what was consistent was their organizing to try and to save what they could.
Now, here in Milwaukee, the Bronzeville community was a little fortunate to have things happen a little later. So as you mentioned, things really kick off in Pittsburgh pretty early on in this process. So by the time we're dealing with it here in Milwaukee, there's a little bit of understanding of what's been happening around the nation. How did that inform the kind of organizing that we saw here?
The organizing that was around here really was the fight for open housing. It's like, okay, you're telling us you're taking these areas away. We should then have the freedom to live wherever we want to live, wherever our dollars can take us. So the fight for open housing, and of course we see that towards the end of the 60s, but Vail Phillips was putting in the early 60s in the city council for open housing law. Then of course we have the protest marches at the end of the 60s. But another thing, and I write about this, what was unique is when some of the African-American leaders, and I'm putting leaders in quotation marks, was like, we need to get more lay leaders, if you will. And we're going to be working with other organizations, other communities. We have to try to educate the people as to what is going on and what is happening. And the more people we can have educated on this issue, who can also then help lead the struggle and the resistance to it.
That's another focus of the book, this idea of trying to navigate structures that you're fundamentally kept out of.
Right.
How did groups navigate that in the city of Milwaukee where the government was really white?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, one strategy I talked about, strategic allies, right? And all throughout the civil rights movement, you have allies. In the case of Milwaukee, I talked about the ways in which faculty from UW-Milwaukee as well as Marquette was helping, were giving what assistance they could to this struggle and to this fight. But as we know, in the case of urban renewal, there might have been some small victories, but overwhelmingly, the machines of power are difficult to stop.
In a lot of ways, the scars from urban renewal have remained in American cities. Milwaukee is no different. Mm-hmm. What does that look like here today?
Well, in the last chapter of the book, you know, I refer to this notion of critical memory. And even though they were not able to stop the highways, even though communities were lost, there were things that were learned from that experience. There was strategies developed during that time that are still being practiced in some ways today. Like in Milwaukee, I was talking about these leadership programs from the 50s and 60s, and one of the classes was public speaking. And later on, when you look at the Black Lives Matter movement, there were, on their website, there were like little seminars on things on how to talk to the media, public speaking. So there are things that are being used. But today, the critical memory, I mean, you've seen a revitalization to a certain degree in Bronzeville now. you're seeing something similar in the Lower Hill as well as Rondo. But anytime something perhaps negative is being proposed by the city, those memories get invoked. You know, remember Bronzeville, right? We're not going to just listen to or just buy into anything that you say. There is active usage of invoking those memories. And also talk about the memorials to these places in these particular cities to help keep it within the public memory. But from the African-American perspective of how they are remembering these communities. So it's often part of the conversation when you're talking about city planning within some of these neighborhoods.
Yeah. Well, Derek, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work. I'm looking forward to talking more about it at Boswell.
Oh, so glad to be here. This was awesome. I wish we can keep, yes, I'm looking forward to keeping the conversation going too. Thank you so much.
Derek Hanley is an assistant professor at UW-Milwaukee and the author of Struggle for the City, Citizenship and Resistance in the Black Freedom Movement. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. They will continue their conversation at Boswell Book Company this coming Tuesday, November 19th. The event is free, and you can find more information about it at boswellbooks.com.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.